My chief thing that I'm responsible for having built is this place called Disney's Animal Kingdom, which is at the Walt Disney World Resort in Florida. It is a rather unique venue, both in its departure from the standard of what the industry was at the time we built it, and in its own properties. It is a park about our human relationship to the natural world, our obligations, and our actions as they impinge upon the lives of animals and the world of nature, both negative and positive. Just if you haven't seen it or heard of it, you know, that big image of the tree is the central icon of the park. If you look closely, you may be able to make out that the body of the tree is entirely composed of animals. It is no coincidence that it is the same dimensions as the Pantheon in Rome. The environments that are built are extremely naturalistic environments in which these animals carry out, for the most part, the natural order of their lives, and people see them very much as they would if they were in the wild. Of course, these animals all come from other zoos around the country. And we present culture fairly responsibly and accurately in the context to which it has to do with the lives of animals. So not so much geopolitically as habitat-based presentation of culture. The park also has a very, very active educational and conservation arm. The Disney Worldwide Conservation Fund is a highly respected organization which has distributed, you know, well over $20 million in funding to very, very effective projects in the now quickly approaching 20 years that it has been open and operating. And so the park is a kind of enactment of the values upon which it is based, and that is part of what I'm going to talk about. Narrative is a kind of essential human condition. This is probably no secret to most of you, but it is worth reiterating in the context of what I'm talking about here. It is not simply a story that can be packaged into a book or into a film or into another media and projected. It is the manner in which we ingest reality itself. It is not possible for us to exist existentially without processing what's happening into narrative formats. So we are, in fact, what we tell ourselves we are. And the incidences that are happening around us, the events of our life, they are not those events in an existential sense. They are what we tell ourselves they are. So narrative interposes between us and the existential state at the very moment that it happens. We live within narrative. It is not cogito ergo sum, but narro ergo sum. We are the story we tell. So narrative is that primal, that core to the human condition. It is the thing that separates us from all those other hominid forms that used to run around the planet doing whatever they did and are all gone. All gone. And all gone in part because they lack the ability to form metaphor, they lack the ability to form symbolic communication, they lack the ability to narrate in the way in which we narrate. So narrative is in your brain, in the juice of your brain. I could strike you on the head with a hammer and destroy very specific and locatable aspects of your ability to construct and recognize story. I could smack you with a hammer and destroy your ability to recognize metaphor. Metaphor. There are people with disabilities that they cannot recognize metaphor. Difficult person to have a conversation with, since metaphor permeates, you know, the way in which human beings communicate with each other. So what I want to make clear is that there is this whole category of narrative experience, which is in the juice of the brain, in the neurological construct of a human creature, and has to do with our evolutionary biology and how we became the humans that we are. And then, yes, there are socially and historically developed constructs like plot and plot structure, which do sit within the social construct and are, you know, the developments of cultures over time. It is almost impossible for us to not narrate things. Once something is in front of us, our brain goes to work and it begins to try to construct associative meaning, it begins to try to find links, it begins to try to construct some kind of master diagram of the pattern association between these things. These three images come off of my laptop. They are acquired in this way. I typed in the word random, I hit images, I went to the bottom left-hand corner, selected that image, scrolled up until I had a new screen, went to the bottom left-hand corner, selected that image, did it three times. That is the source of this imagery, the word random. And yet, in the time that it's been sitting on this screen, everybody's looking at it going, that has to, what does that mean? How does the lady with the thing relate and the fire and the pyramid and the word? There's no words on the page and it's all regular. What is it? It's nothing. It is nothing. I think that's pretty interesting. Again, I can put this up. It doesn't need, it's like for 3 seconds. And everybody understands what's going on this page. There is a metaphor at work on this page. There's not a human being in this world, in this room, that does not understand that metaphor. I can make that image be gone right now. I don't need more time than that. The instantaneous construction of a metaphoric link between, what are we looking at here? A piece of metal, a piano, some human hands, and fire. These objects logically have nothing to do with each other, but they now instantaneously hold a common relationship to this metaphor of flight. You know, your dog does not do this. So, you know, books, you should read The Origin of Stories by Brian Boyd. It's great. It's got full of all, you know, much, much deeper examination of this and other issues of the evolutionary biological source of our appreciation of fiction. I'm just going to talk about fiction for just a second here, because again, it's peculiar. As human beings, we actually have a higher affinity for fiction than we do for data. It's a very simple reason why. Data is historical. Data relates to what has happened. A dog can relate to data. Fiction relates to what might happen, what could happen. And our species is here today because we have been able to speculate on what could happen. If we were a species that only dealt with what has happened, we would still all be sitting on a tree in Africa. And we're not. So we have an extremely high predisposition to entertain fiction. This becomes important later on in my discourse. So narrative. Narrative is a kind of fractal structure. Narrative, since we know that it cannot consist within plot, because plot is a social construction, plot is linear, plot does depend on a whole bunch of other associations. Narrative, since it's in your brain, and your brain works in this kind of rhizomatic connection, multiple connections that go all over the place, narrative itself mimics this construction and is a kind of fractal construction, a fractal structure. Mathematical, but not Euclidean. So think about, this is a fractal. That fern is a fractal, right? You know, anybody who's ever read anything about fractal, you're going to see something like this. And we all know how that works. There is a formula. That formula drives a form. Once I have that form, the form is self-similar, the form is recursive, and the form is iterative within the limits of the formula that gives rise to it. So it's incredibly predictable. It's a pattern. Humans, we love these patterns, because if we didn't love patterns, we all would have been eaten by leopards 4 million years ago. So there's a pattern. There's a fern, right? It's reiterating and regenerating the pattern by which it grows. And I know full well, because it's a mathematical fractal fern, if I zoom in on a single frond of that fern, it's going to mimic the master pattern of the fern itself forever and forever and forever, which makes it boring. The other fern is an actual fern. This fern is attempting to execute precisely the same fractal relationship, but in the world. In a world of frost, in a world of animals and bugs, in a world of disease, in a world of somebody with clippers that comes and clips it off and puts it on a screen. And so that pattern, while recognizable, is imperfect and commands our attention. Because no matter how long we look at this pattern, we'll never fully be able to reconcile that pattern because the things that are impeding upon it continue to cause it to generate itself in a surprising way, and that is how narrative functions. Dickens is a fractal. There's 4.5 million words in Dickens. It's like, you know, 10 feet of dense paper full of, you know, Fezziwig and everyone else. But you can take a paragraph, there's like not much more than a paragraph of Dickens, and look into it and see that it is Dickens. That is recursive, that is self-similar, That is the iteration of a master pattern that is set, that underlies the entire pattern of everything. Dickens' work is a fractal expression of Dickens. And we recognize that it is Dickens because it itself is fractal.